Hey, what's going on, everyone? It is Brian, and welcome back to another episode of the Brian Kenny Podcast. This episode is going to be a little bit different than what is the regular scheduled audio of the podcast. You see, back in December of 2018, so about a month ago, I was lucky enough to be asked to be interviewed on stage at Google's EMEA headquarters for the Startup Grind. So Startup Grind is this community that is in partnership with Google and some other amazing, awesome companies that helps to nurture the startup community across multiple different cities globally. And I was asked to essentially walk through my journey as an entrepreneur to date. And I got to tell all of the wonderful things that I've been through, but also the hiccups along the way and the different roadblocks and where I fell down, and essentially just the journey of where I started, where my passion began, the different things that I've been through and the different jobs and things that I've tried to build, starting an in-flight entertainment company to now building Minicorp, one of the, a great product agency that is based here in Dublin as well. So the main goals or the main reasons that I do interviews or, try to do any sort of events is really around trying to inspire people to take charge of the passion or the things that they really want to accomplish or achieve in their lives. I guess I was really lucky when I was young because I knew exactly what I wanted to do and how I wanted to do it. But a lot of people don't have that luxury, and I meet people on a consistent basis that are doing jobs or working on things that they don't necessarily care or believe in. And I think that that is such a, it's a downfall for society that people, once, if they were involved in the things that they were passionate about, imagine where we would be as a race, as humans, at this point. So finding your passion or finding things that you really care about and starting to work on those ideas, I will do absolutely everything in my power to try and nurture that and try to help people to accomplish that. So before we jump into the audio of the interview, I just want to say a huge thank you to Ashlyn, to all the people at Startup Grind, and just for the opportunity to have been asked to go and to speak at that event. And also to all of the people who came to the event. It was amazing, and I really, really enjoyed it. Okay, so let's jump into the audio.
Thank you so much for being here in a busy festive season. So happy to have you all here and have Brian here. So actually it was supposed to be my co-director David Scanlon doing the interview tonight, but I'm really, really happy that I get to do it because I was just talking about you earlier and I was saying, without being really cheesy, he's the type of person that makes you feel like you're a better person when you leave him.
So, aww.
Yeah, and a very
my head will not leave this room.
But a very nice kind of person to interview around Christmas time as well.
That's lovely. Thank you.
So anyway, welcome to Startup Grind. So for those of you who've not been here before, we meet once a month in Dublin, and myself or David interview a successful founder. So we're very lucky to meet wonderful people like Brian, and we wouldn't be here without our sponsors. So obviously, one of them is Google. We're so delighted to be here tonight. I'm sure most of you saw the Christmas treats, and there'll be a bit of Prosecco after and pizza, so hopefully you'll be able to stick around for that. And we're also sponsored by Bank of Ireland, Jean in the corner. Hello. Hi, Jean. And Software Placements, who are not here. Maybe they're another Christmas party. But anyway, we're very grateful to all of our sponsors, and it means that we can put on these incredible events every month. So I think I might kick off there, just in terms of format. So we will chat for about kind of 45 minutes, an hour, and then we'll open up to Q&A. So think of any questions that you would like to ask Brian. So hello.
Hello, how are you?
So Brian Kenny, you're the founder of Minicorp. Mm-hmm. Minicorp develops mobile and web applications, right?
Yeah, so I guess to give MiniCorp an introduction,
please
we
do.
Help early stage companies and products to be built or to get validated. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of, you know, for all of the entrepreneurs that are here today, the process from the idea or concept all the way to either a profitable or investable business, that whole period of just chaos and mayhem is what we do at MiniCorp.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. So you describe yourself as being addicted to passionate people and building great products. So I'd love to kind of take a trip down memory lane, first of all,
sure.
and just understand a little bit more about your background, where you started off. Were you always building things? What did you study in college? Take us back to your early days.
Deadly. So I was always an extremely lucky child. And the reason for that is, I don't know why it happened to me, but my amazing parents, my father and mother, purchased a computer at a very, very early age. So when I was, you know, 8 or 9 years old, I had this tool that mm-hmm. was within my house and around me all of the time that would facilitate my hunger and passion towards building things. Mm-hmm. It was kind of like an evolution from Lego to Technics to now this whole computer that I could build things with. And because of that, I'm completely cognizant and aware that there is people out there who are still looking for their passion or still trying to find the thing mm-hmm. that really drives them. Mm-hmm. And that's why I feel so privileged as a child to kind of see that item and to know that it was going to drive me forward in a lot of respects.
Mm-hmm. So, did you know that though when you were 8 or 9?
I kind of did. Like now it's 100% evolved to a point of it's not computers that enable me to build things, it's mm-hmm. people. But back then to have this, you know, I think Steve Jobs calls it a bicycle or a bicycle for the mind or something mm. like that. And it's so true. Like I was completely unlocked. Now my brother and parents would probably say, you know, you're too introverted or you're maybe spending too much time on the computer. But, you know, I found this drive of having a 400-page Java book and at 8 or 9 years old going, I really want to learn this thing, mm-hmm. which is insane. Like, I never had that drive in anything else at all. I hated sports. Everything that I tried my hand at, I was at a point of I just really don't love that so much. Mm-hmm. So invariably, to kind of move on, I then, you know, went to school, my dad taught that I was extremely clever then mm-hmm. and said, you know, you're so good at computers, I'm going to send you to a private school. But that was, I think, a bad decision.
Okay.
I was based around all of these other people who were more affluent than hungry or passionate about the things that they wanted to accomplish. And because of that, I really took a left-hand turn away from school. Mm. I don't know how much of this I can talk about, but I'll just put a little bit of it there. And that's, my brother was then in UCD at the time, and he was doing science. And one of the first modules in science was computer science. Mm-hmm. And he said, why don't you come to my computer science lectures and get a good understanding, a good feeling for what college would be? And I loved it. Like, I loved going there, but then I realized that what they were teaching in college was like binary and RAM and all of these things that it wasn't about building things. Mm-hmm. It was about the understanding of each of the elements and how they come together. I would say that, you know, imagine you were put on a desert island somewhere and you had to build a computer from parts. College is deadly for that. Like, you mm-hmm. get to really understand how everything works. I cared more about like speed and building things and throwing it out there in the world and mm-hmm. seeing where it went. So I decided not to go to college. And instead, I got a job in Dunn Stores packing bacon.
Wow, okay. So how old were you when you crashed the lectures?
I was, I'd say, 16,
okay.
something around that.
Cool.
So the one part of college that I loved at that point is that my brother had another student ID, and I used that to go to the student union and to meet people and to
Great.
Talk to people and to hustle at pool and do all of that kind of stuff.
Okay.
But yeah, I went to Dunn Stores then, and I got the feeling of earning money,
yeah,
which is crazy because when you have money, you can then use it like fuel in the car to go and to build things. Like, I can now buy other computer programs, or I can buy a new mm-hmm. computer, I can do all of this. And so my evolution from that was then to, how do I get a job in computers? So I moved to a role in IBM where I was given literally a stack of paper and I would have to type in what's on the paper into a computer. And I turned around to the lady who was the systems administrator for that company and asked her, at some point, you're going to leave. And I would love if I could have your job and if you would mentor me between now and when that period is.
Wow.
And she did, and it was amazing. And her name is Susan Lynch, and I don't think she knows this, but I mention her quite a lot in all the stories that I tell. Because without her, I don't think that I would have jumped or made that whole move or connection.
Mm. How long did you last at Dunn's, packing bacon?
I was there for about 6 months or a year.
Okay.
It was freezing. You'd have to get there at like 5 o'clock in the morning, and I was, it was a terrible job, but it was an amazing job. It was the first kind of ladder.
And gave you cash to do the things that you love to do as well.
Exactly.
And I always think that any kind of job like that in retail or hospitality it's really important for later on as well. So you went from Dunn Stores to IBM.
Yep.
Moved through the ranks there, thanks to Susan. And then what happened?
So out of IBM, or once I've kind of got to a point within IBM of doing the sysadmin thing, I decided that I wanted to try something new. Like I really believed in this whole idea that you should never stay in one place for longer than 3 years. And so I decided to apply to another company. And that company was called Car Buyer's Guide and Page 7 Media, who just did traditional media. And I became the IT manager in there. And there wasn't really a ton of things going on there. But I decided that I really enjoyed hardware, and I then moved from Page 7 Media into Black Knight, and Black Knight was class. I got to work in Dublin and build a data center, or build their data center from one or two cabinets to this entire floor, of which I'm still extremely proud at how tidy I did the cables. But then this crazy thing happened, and this is kind of where the turning point happened. Steve is the co-founder of MiniCorp as well.
Mm-hmm.
I really believe that with Instagram, you follow people. But I really cared more about locations.
Okay.
Like, how could I follow GitHub, or how could I follow Facebook, or how could I follow different photos that are being posted in locations? Because mm-hmm. I was really into the startup scene in San Francisco and everything, but I couldn't afford to go to San Francisco
at
the time.
This is pre-hashtag? Or when was this?
Okay. You couldn't even search for hashtags or locations or anything in Instagram. But I wanted that, I would follow Google, I would follow this building. And any photos that are posted at this building is in my feed. So mm-hmm. I'm not really following people at all. So Steve and I decided, why don't we go and build that? And we did. And then my wife and I were over in San Francisco at one part of our honeymoon, and one of the guys who was the product manager within Instagram said, we love Spots, like we love what you've built.
Was it called Spots?
Spots.
Oh, yeah. I love that name.
And this crazy thing started to happen where I'm like, shit, is this like where the whole company acquisition thing happens? Like I was so wet behind the ears and I had no idea what was happening, but I was out to dinner with these people and we're talking about, how do we bring Spots into Instagram? But then a week later, Facebook bought Instagram and everything was kind of shelved and brought off the table. But that hunger, that drive, that understanding that with a computer and with somebody else, I could build this thing and for it to be extremely valuable and used by lots and lots of people, that's amazing. Mm. Like, I love that to bits, the fact that we get to do this on a daily basis in MiniCorp now. But back then, it was a completely new idea that I would build something, lots of people would use it,
mm-hmm.
and then there's great value that was created from it.
Mm. Okay. And then, so you came home, maybe a bit despondent that Spots wasn't going to be a reality.
Yeah.
Then what happened?
Then I packed it in at Black Knight. I realized that my future lay in building products.
Mm-hmm.
So how do I go and do that? So I met a gent by the name of Joe, and he had a company called Retail Emotion. Retail Emotion,
mm-hmm.
They really started from providing good products to airlines. So one of the biggest problems that some airlines had was the screw tops on vodka bottles. So some of the crew members would actually fill them up with water and that kind of stuff. So instead, Joe created just sachets and just really simple, great products like that that were distributed.
That's good to know. I never knew that's what, why, but obviously it's,
okay. So even now when you're on like the, you know, like a Ryanair flight or something and you see...
Not on Aer Lingus. Maybe they trust Aer Lingus staff. But,
but even, you know the coffee cup lid where there's like this kind of filter that's in the coffee cup lid? That's one of his products. Like he has these mad, crazy ideas and brings them to the world. But we decided to tackle this problem to do with in-flight entertainment. So we think of short-haul aircrafts, Airbus A320s or Boeing 737s. At the front and back galley of those, there is lots of oven slots. But the plane only ever really needs two ovens max. So we decided to build a hardware solution that wouldn't require any retrofitting to the aircraft at all. You would literally slide it in and it would draw power like the oven would. But inside the solution was a just a regular server, some Wi-Fi access points, and a 3G, 4G modem. What would happen is you jump on the plane, you get in the plane, you connect to the Wi-Fi, and you can do all the traditional in-flight entertainment things like buy movies, magazines. But the real core of the product lay within the connection between you and your destination. Like, how do I understand what's going on in Paris? Can I book tickets to things? Can I book my hotel? Everything in this kind of offline environment for, you know, 2 or 3 hours. So we built that, and that's where the really the next part of my journey started. Because I knew how to build things, but I didn't really know how to conduct myself in a business environment. Like, I had to go to Frankfurt now and don a suit, and I had to sit in front of a boardroom with, you know, eight executives who are the key decision makers in different airlines. But I had no idea what I was doing. Like, I literally had no idea. But I sat there and decided to put one foot in front of the other and say, you know, if I don't try, if I don't challenge myself, what am I going to look back on in 2 or 3 years' time? I'm going to be annoyed that I didn't at least try. So what we needed is we needed to get our first customer. So for some reason, and extremely kind of proud of this fact, when we went over there, we managed to secure both a 500 grand investment to go and to build a company further, but also for them to be our key partner, the first airline to kind of believe in what we were building and to provide us with an aircraft. So with the EASA and certifications, you need a plane to certify your product against it. And they were willing to give us all of this. But it was amazing. And so myself and Jan, one of the other co-founders in Media Motion, we flew around the world and we talked to multiple airlines, from Singapore Airlines to Condor to all of these different people. And I learned so much. I learned, you know, how to manage conversations with these people, how to understand from an emotional intelligence point of view what they're really asking for. And even in larger companies, like we talk about lots of really, you know, startup orientated companies, but these companies, the people who are in front of you in those meetings, their wants, desires, or needs are a hell of a lot different than a startup person who is, you know, a one or two person company. So to really figure out how to navigate that space, how to build good relationships with these people, to be able to sell the product to them was amazing. And it was a very, very challenging part of my life, but I enjoyed it a lot. And I'm glad that I challenged myself.
So did you, when you say you kind of learned as you went along, did you were you actively pitching? Or did you kind of shadow? Or did you make any funny mistakes that you'd like to tell us about? Because that's always interesting.
If we had a screen, I would love to show what the first presentation or the first pitch deck was like. It was rancid, like properly terrible. There was even an occasion where... this is probably one of the biggest failures that we had within that company, where we were going to meet an airline and we had this prototype that we had built. So the hardware engineers put it together in a very rough and crude way. But we wanted to use it in a perspective that we have a meeting with a potential client, we turn on the server and ask them within the meeting to connect to the server. So we're heading over to the UK. We pop the test server in the back of a car. We're driving down. We go over on the boat because there's no hope that a plane is going to let us bring this thing on. And we drive all the way down to London. Mm-hmm. And I'm really stressed now. Like I'm kind of going like, is this thing going to work? Is it not going to work? So I'm charging the battery. I'm checking everything 3 or 4 times in my hotel room. And I decide it's okay. I'm going to go to sleep. I go to sleep, wake up the next day. We go to the meeting. And, you know, Jan kind of says, you know, let's turn on the server. We turn on the server. The whole thing works perfectly. Like it goes off without a hitch. It was amazing. We drive home again. The next time that server is turned on, the whole thing went up in smoke. So
wow.
Imagine like we talk about luck in business. Imagine that had happened at the meeting. And imagine how close and small the airline industry world is. We would be gone overnight.
What would you have done? In the moment.
I'd get so scared when I think about that. What would I have done? Probably grab the thing and try to throw it out a window or do something. But I don't think there's any... It's extremely difficult to come back from that.
Yeah.
Like you can say it's a prototype or it's something that we're working on, but it was just the ampage, the cables that were used between the battery and the server were wrong. Mm-hmm. They were too small. Mm-hmm. But to see the whole thing go up in flames was just eye-opening. And we can strategize and we can plan and I can be as prepared as possible that night in the hotel to test everything 3 or 4 times. But it could just go up in smoke. But it's mad. Then at the end of that, within Media in Motion, it was eventually sold to Lufthansa.
Wow.
And it was at that point that I decided I don't have a crazy attention span. Like, it's kind of a year to a year and a half.
But you were there for 3 years, was it?
3 years.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
That's your rule. You said earlier you kind of have a 3-year stint.
Yeah.
Okay.
That was a bit different. Like, if that was 2 years or if that was 4 years, I would have absolutely went along with it.
Because, okay, cool.
Because it was something that I felt that I was really building. It was a company, you know? Mm-hmm. And now, you know, decided to take all of the learnings and everything that I'd gathered from that company and say... How can I get to build more companies in a more frequent basis? Mm. And that is essentially MiniCorp now.
Cool. Okay. So how did you make that jump? So you were working in Black Knight, mm-hmm. and then you go on to become a co-founder. So that must have been quite difficult of a transition. So how did you make that decision or just take a leap of faith? Or I'm sure there's lots of people in the room who are considering going out on their own.
Yeah.
And I know you said you had that desire and that passion and you believed in it and all that is great, but also you need to earn a living as well. So I'd love to know more about what kind of solidified that decision for you.
My wife, I would say. We hashed it out for a very long period of time. So Lee is actually Joe's PA or EA.
Okay.
So she knew him intimately and kind of knew what I would be getting involved in. Mm-hmm. But there was a lot of questions. It's fearful, right? You don't know what's going to happen, but you also have to kind of weigh up the whole situation of what happens if I don't.
Yeah.
And I knew that I'd gotten to a point in my career at Black Knight where if I fail, if I get it wrong, there's another job. Like I'll get a job, I'll be fine. It's mad how all these really pivotal parts of my life actually happen at strange periods. I think when I moved into that position, we had bought our first house. When I moved to MiniCorp, we had our first daughter.
Okay.
And I really believe that you have to challenge yourself and you have to look in the face of risk and try. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't, like, I don't know, it's a really tough one, I think.
No, I think you summarized it pretty well there. Okay, so now we're at MiniCorp. How did you come up with the idea, come up with the name? Tell us about the early days and what that looked like.
So I think a really good rule of thumb is to not leave what you're doing without knowing that there is some sort of financial security there.
Yeah.
Don't just take a leap of faith and expect to land a customer tomorrow. but also there is a lot of hours in the day. If you would really like to go and to build something, you can do that for a couple of hours in the evening to get to that transition point, to get to that kind of pivotal turning point for you where the business can sustain you. Because like I'm absolutely infatuated with education, with the, I know this is going a little bit off topic.
No, go ahead.
But when you think about teachers, they get paid an extremely low amount for the work that they do. Mm-hmm. But yet they will be the people who are proactively shaping the kids versus we leverage and we say that doctors and lawyers get paid the most amount, but they're reactive. They're looking, they see the problem and then they fix the problem. Versus if we actually had extremely great teachers, they would fix the problem before it even gets mm-hmm. to that point, or we could see huge leaps within that. So by removing money from that situation, like when you think about a teacher that's on, let's say, 20 or 30,000 per year, mm-hmm. he or she is concerned about, you know, rent, food, everything to do with their life. And if we removed money from that equation and that teacher didn't have to worry about those things, I would nearly guarantee that the passion would shine through and they would start to really think about, how do I provide the best education for these kids? How do I, you know, just kind of throw everything up in the air and really figure out how to do education properly? Mm-hmm. So by money being such a priority for them, the bandwidth is limited to what inroads we can really make in education. Mm-hmm. So going all the way back again, when we think about hiring somebody, or when I was about to make a jump or to do anything, to get that first customer enabled me to focus like a laser on building great product, mm-hmm. not worrying about, you know, taking jobs that I didn't want to take in order to sustain the business. It was about finding the right client who was willing to take a leap of faith with me, mm-hmm. and for us to kind of grow Minicore from there. So where did the name come from? I was out in my back garden one day and I said, you know, we want to build small companies into big ones. So mm-hmm. it's Mini and Corp.
Mini like Corporation. Corp. Yeah, got it.
I then went on to Icon Finder and typed in business, and it gave me these three buildings that became our logo. And then I liked the color green.
Cool. So. Okay. So you've mentioned great products loads. What is a great product?
So let's think about a great company. It kind of comes down to three main modules for me. There's mm-hmm. first of all, what is the idea and what's the propensity, or what's the probability of that becoming successful within its market? Second of all, it's the people. So what is their passion or connection to the first thing, and how are they going to obtain it? Mm-hmm. What are they like? Are they hungry? Are they ambitious? Are they fighters towards this thing? And third of all, it's about capabilities. So connections to mentors, connections to investors, domain knowledge within the sector, mm-hmm. all of these things. Once you bring the three of those together, I think the chance of you having a great business mm-hmm. is increased. Mm-hmm. The second thing is to really see people look at it from a really strategic point of view. So a lot of people come to us with ideas and say, you know, I take company A and I take company B and I mash them together and that's my new product, like Airbnb for chairs or whatever, you know, versus strategically looking at where things are evolving. So I spoke with somebody about this when we were starting. When we think about Brexit, for example, we'd expect with Brexit to happen that all of these bankers will move over to Ireland mm-hmm. and high net worth individuals. So the next hop in that journey would be that we'd expect lots of premium A grade offices to get built. We see that that's happening right now. But then those people will also bring over their families and their kids. So those people will probably want great Montessoris and creches and premium great creches. Mm-hmm. So deploying a amazing creche app or a Montessori app for that specific target is cool. So to see people look into the future and to deploy against it now, I find that amazing mm-hmm. when you get good product people like that.
Is that a real product that you're describing, or is that an example?
No, it's just an idea.
Okay. Okay, cool. So tell us about your favorite product.
Dear.
If you had to pick one.
Which is my favorite?
A product you wish you had created.
A product that I've always, so going back to the in-flight entertainment and travel, I don't understand how this is not done, how nobody has built this. You know when you go to Berlin or you go to a city that you've never been to before and you want to discover it? Mm-hmm. The tools that are available right now is, you know, like Foursquare and Facebook Places and Yelp and TripAdvisor. And they tell me things like the top 10 cocktail restaurants to go to or, you know, the top local attractions mm-hmm. and things like that to do. Like, that makes no sense. We live in this world where the app can understand me. Mm-hmm. They can understand the context of, am I there with my wife? Am I there on business? Who am I there with? Mm-hmm. What am I interested in? You know, if Brian is there on business, show him a road that just has, like, lots of pubs in a row. If Brian is there with his family, show him great spots to bring the kids for, you know, different activities and attractions and things. Like, to say the top 10 cocktail restaurants every single time to every single person, it's just mind-blowing to me.
What about spontaneity and discovery?
This is, yeah.
We so might clash here. That's
yeah,
okay.
I think that things are changing, though. So, you know in Maxall, where you now have these digital displays in the forecourts, and mm-hmm. they're doing adverts, at the top of them, there's a little camera, and the camera is placed to understand the demographic of people that are walking by. Mm-hmm. So the camera's reading consistently and seeing who's walking by, and then using AI and some other great things says, you know, it's primarily 25 to 35-year-olds that walk by here. Mm-hmm. They're dressed in, you know, formal attire or whatever it might be. So they then turn around to H&M and they say to H&M, you should put your store here in Dublin because that's where the majority of your target demographic will walk mm-hmm. by. So when you think about spontaneity is slowly starting to dissipate, I think. The more data, the more different patterns that we're trying to analyze, we're trying to take all of this data and figures and insights and analytics to create this falsehood of spontaneity, but it really is trying to help to understand who the person is. You know that part in The Matrix where your man's eating the steak and he goes, ignorance is bliss? Mm-hmm. I prefer that part. I prefer the spontaneity of that.
What about, though, I totally get what you're saying, but there are an increasing percentage of people who are going offline and who are putting their smartphones down for the weekend. And at Web Summit, this is a massive kind of area of discussion. So we're seeing significant mental health problems from overuse of apps, social media, and people are just getting tired.
Yeah.
And maybe there will just be two separate groups of people. Maybe, you know, there will be people who prefer to be spontaneous and those who prefer to be served spontaneity and maybe think that they're creating their own spontaneity.
Yeah.
What do you think will happen?
So it's a really interesting point because when it comes to, like, mindfulness is such a huge topic right now. Mm-hmm. And you have people that are on the dart and using Headspace and Calm. Like, that's mad. Like, that would never have been there a year ago. Mm. And we briefly spoke about this a while ago, but I would nearly say that where product will go will be hugely affected by this. Mm-hmm. So you think about that taxi driver, and he or she is in their cab at the moment, and they have My Taxi and Uber and Get, or let's say three or four different taxi apps. As they become mindful, will they turn around one day and say, do you know what? I just want to have one app. I want to have clarity and focus. I want to focus on the things in my life. I want to disconnect from these things. So does that mean for player two and player three that the ability to break into new markets becomes more difficult because of that whole to get to number one? Once you are number one, it's deadly, but to get to that point is really difficult.
Or maybe there'll be more people on the streets hailing taxis.
And going back,
let's ditch our smartphones.
Yeah, but it's cool because I think we're getting to this point where I often struggled with people are far more likely to give up a half an hour of their time than they are 50 euros.
Yeah,
and you can make the 50 euros back, but time is this finite resource and it should be cherished and nurtured to know that you have between X and Y to get all of the stuff that you want to get done in this world done. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to chop up a part of your time, if you're going to give it to something or someone, make sure that it's a really diligent process of how you do that and why you're selecting them.
Mm-hmm. So let's go back to MiniCorp and your team. So I listened to a couple of Brian's podcasts last night, which are really good. I highly recommend them.
I and need it's to
not,
do more.
I'm not just saying that because we're talking tonight. I really, really genuinely enjoyed them. I like how you make them long enough, but still short, so like 20, 25 minutes.
Yeah.
And shareable. So I was able to take away key things. I would love to know more about your team, because you talk so much about the people that work for you in a really positive light. And you take your role as leader very seriously. I don't know if leader is the right word, because you know, you said a few times, I work for them. So I'd love to know what do you think is important as someone who manages people, inspires people? What kind of criteria do you use when you're hiring people? Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. So adults, I think, is a big thing. When you have somebody who's passionate about what they do, I don't know when they're the best at doing it. They need to become self-aware mm-hmm. to know when they're the best at doing it. So are you the most creative at 2 o'clock in the morning, or are you the most creative at 8 in the morning? Mm-hmm. I don't know, but it's up to you to do that. As a company, why would I say it's between 9 and 6 and you must be in the office and you know these are the working hours, mm-hmm. where the efficiency, the actual output, the work product that we're getting is reduced because of that constraint.
Mm-hmm.
Like you could be the most efficient at 3 o'clock in the morning. Don't get me wrong, there's always overlaps, there's always meetings, there's always things that need to happen within a company. But to just allow people to be in control of their own time, to be in control of how they want to conduct themselves, how they want to create something, how they want to be, you know, the gatekeepers of the things that they're going to create is a huge, huge thing. Like I remember there was a company that a long time ago, and all of the salespeople were given credit cards, and one person abused the credit card and bought things that they probably shouldn't have. But they took the credit cards off all of the salespeople. And you're going like, are we four? Like, is that really a thing that we're going to punish the entire thing, like this group mentality? It's just, it's mad for me. So I think treating people like adults, but also doing really healthy check-ins is a big mm-hmm. thing as well. Like during any potential hire in MiniCorp, I'll ask, I'm going to tell you unequivocally what I'm going to take from you, mm-hmm. and I want you to tell me what you're going to take from me. So, for instance, I would say, Andy, I want to start our design department within MiniCorp. I'm going to use you to build up the assets, to build up the team, and to grow the design department from the ground up.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd expect Andy to turn around and say, you know, I'm going to use MiniCorp as a stopgap or something in order to launch my product career and to then move on somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
To actually have these adult conversations where you go, okay, now I'm thinking about moving on shortly. And I can use my networks, my people that I know to say, Andy is an amazing designer, you should totally hire this person, or this is a really good jump for you. I remember David Newell, who was an intern at MiniCorp, and he loved MiniCorp. Mm-hmm. Absolutely loved it. But I think from a responsibility and respect point of view, for him to come out of college to try working in a small company, it's a great thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
But he also needs to see the other side of that world.
Mm.
He needs to go to Intercom, or he needs to go to Facebook, or he's in Intercom right now, and to see what it means to be a part of a large team and having small influence on a huge product mm-hmm. versus the flip side of that coin.
Yeah.
But I think me as an employer, me as somebody who wants to create this company, by removing all of these constraints and knowing that they're adults and people that want to be in charge of their lives, the things that are created, how they feel about the product, the work that's done is done like a family, like we actually care about what we're doing and mm-hmm. why we're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not batch processing, it's not, you know, that it's a resource.
Mm. So that you mentioned that in your podcast as well. So everyone knows exactly why they're there. There's no ambiguity. So even when you're having a crap day and you're doing menial tasks, you know that you're all heading towards a place, or you're there for kind of one reason. Do you find it hard to have difficult conversations if someone is not performing?
I struggle with confrontation a lot, I think. But I also think that it's communication is just key. We went to all the way to 9 people at one stage, I think, and then we're back down at 4. We bring in more revenue at 4 than we did at 9 because we've solved one problem. And that's, how does the cross-pollination of information happen throughout the team? How does Fatima learn from something that Andy has done? How do I learn from something that Steve has done? How do we stop being a team that is just freelancers hacking together on a table, but we're actually a body, you know, like a I don't know the best way to describe it, but we're one in so many different respects. And that healthiness comes from constant communication and challenging, like knowing that if we find something wrong, there's no blame. Like, we're not saying that, hey, you got it wrong, you know. It's more about, you got it wrong, how do we fix it?
Yeah.
And I remember saying this with Andy and Steve and Fatima. It's, there is, everything that's around us right now has been made by somebody. You know, they started with floors, and then they made couches, and then they were all made by somebody. There's no definitive way of, this is how you do a product agency, this is how you do a design sprint, this is how you build something. There's there's no blueprint, and there shouldn't be. So why does MiniCorp, why don't we create our own processes, our own ways of doing things, our own kind of take on how we want to build companies from infancy to profitable? And I love that. I love that it's, that constant communication has challenges, it has, you know, you're gonna lock heads in some respects, but at the end of the day, we know that we close the door and we've done a great day's work.
Okay, really interesting. So you're operating as one body, without that sounding too kind of
weird.
Odd. No, I totally get it though. I know open communication and sharing ideas. And down at Huckletree, so Huckletree is a co-working space that I run down the road. We interact with a lot of early stage startup companies, and a lot of the founders have this this issue, and I call it when you move from mate to manager. So you're all really good friends and you're great mates, but you also have to manage these people, and it is really, really hard. So what kind of tactics do you use, or you know, how often are your one-to-ones? Do you have a template you use? How do you manage that?
You see, it's kind of easy in a team of 4.
Yeah.
I mean, we're all just around each other all of the time. It's strange, the things we do that we don't even notice. Like, we go for lunch together almost every single day. And normally, like in all of the other companies that I've worked in, that was just never a thing.
Yeah.
Like, you would take that time as your time. Like, I'm going to get out of this thing so I can go and go somewhere. And maybe it's because I was in things that I didn't really enjoy as much as what I enjoy now. But that level of communication and also respect and responsibility to everybody is huge, and it's a part of who we are as a company. It's a part of the success of how we do things.
Okay, great.
It is. I love that. I love
that. It's great that you have it. It's kind of a secret sauce, or whatever you've created is obviously working. So that's your team and your people. Tell us more about the companies that you work with, and how early you get involved. How do you help a company, you know, move from the ideation phase to being a product-led company? Because that's a super interesting journey. And I know you say it's not a one-night stand, so you are in it kind of for the long haul.
I often compare it to that, like that we're raising a baby together. Like, somebody comes along one day and says, I have this great idea, I have this thing that I want to go and build. And that baby needs clothes, it needs nurturing, it needs a lot of things. So I remember about a week or two ago, somebody came in and said, you know what, can we just give you equity in the company right now? And you build it, you know, for sweat equity right now. And that to me is like having a one-night stand and we have a baby together. Like, you don't know me, you don't know MiniCorp, we've never worked together, we've never done anything, but yet you want to have a baby with me.
Yeah.
What? And I think when you do need to be crude, like you do need to actually say, you just completely devalued your entire company by willing.
Is this because they didn't have cash, or what was the rationale?
I think as they had cash, or they could get cash. I think that they just there's a strange feeling around a force towards getting tech into your deck as soon as you possibly can. Like they didn't have any technical people within their company or on the first level, and so they were extremely fast or quick to look to how can we solve that problem. And it's like, just give these people equity and slot them in there. But it's crazy, like when you think about the other successful companies, like Butternut Box, for example, was Kev and Dave. They were just two guys who Dave's mum wanted to really look after their dog, and so he started to cook for the dog, and then the whole product was born. But they came from extremely well jobs in Goldman Sachs, so they were earning like a bomb.
For those who don't, has anyone heard of Butternut Box? Yeah, cool. So it's basically Deliveroo for dogs. So dog owners get delivered fresh meals on a daily, weekly basis. They're based at Huckletree in London. They've grown from, I think, like 2 employees to over 60, doing incredibly well. So we see loads of pet tech companies just taking off. House My Dog or another one.
Yeah.
So we laugh, but they're doing amazingly.
Absolutely.
And have really cute dogs as well.
Yeah. But it's crazy to see, like, we talked about passion quite a lot there. To leave the high-paying kind of, you know, really, I would say, successful jobs to go and to do premium dog food.
Yeah.
And a lot of people would turn around and go, are you mad? Like, what are you actually doing? But I love that they did that. And I love that where the company is now is because of the passion and the drive and the hunger that they have to bring that product to market. They care about the dogs. They care about
the
dogs.
But it's smart, though. If you think of how society is running now, less people having kids, more people have animals. They'll spend more money on them. It does. When you break it down, you know, at kind of face value, it seems like, how is this working? But actually, you can see why.
Yeah. Yeah. And I remember, like, one of the biggest problems that they always struggled with is because it was either, you know, Kevin really wanted to focus on logistics, Dave really wanted to focus on manufacturing and the building of the product. And as those founders slowly started to build an amazing company, there had to be those really tough conversations between the both of them. Like, what are we going to focus on? How are we going to do it? How are we going to scale this business? And they're challenging conversations, but it's also, I think once you're in the trenches together and you see the success of where things are going, the answers tend to provide themselves at some point as well.
Okay, so take us back to that process that you go through. So you meet a company for the first time. What happens?
Meet with them for the first time. We probably meet with them a good 4 or 5 times easy. Like lots of cups of coffee, lots of who are you and why are you doing this? And really getting a good understanding. I tried to do this thing with people. In the first 30 seconds of meeting somebody, can I name 5 things that they really care about?
Oh, wow.
And
I kind of want to ask for me, but I don't. Like dogs.
Yeah. It's in there somewhere. And for me, then, it's you know, how do we get to know each other to a point of we know that we want to work together? Mm-hmm. Like, I care, MiniCorp cares about the idea as much as you care about the idea. Mm-hmm. Because if we're just in it for a paycheck, it becomes something completely else.
So would you turn down business then?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Even to a point that MiniCorp could potentially fail, I would turn it down.
Wow.
I honestly don't think that it's fair. We need to have that responsibility and respect towards the idea. This is somebody's baby, somebody's, you know, concept, idea, and thing that they really want to be successful. If I'm flippant enough to just turn around and say, let's go and build it together because I want a paycheck, it's not fair. So after we kind of have those cups of coffee, it's then going into what we call the MiniCorp workshop. So that's a 2 to 3 week kind of period where we deconstruct everything around the idea. Like, what is the company? What is the vision of the company? Where is it going? Why do you want it to go there? We set KPIs, but we also set failure goals. Failure goals would be, you know, if we don't hit 5,000 euros in recurring revenue by month 6, we're going to stop. if we don't get to 3,000 users by month 12, we'll stop. Mm-hmm. Like actually defining the areas of which you're willing to remove yourself from this company and not kind of chase that blackjack table type of thing.
Okay, so do you work on commercials as well as development? Yep. Okay, cool.
Yeah, and then we'll move into the MVP. Mm-hmm. So an MVP for us is really, like even with that taxi app, would be something very simple like, how do I get a mobile phone? How do I get an app on the phone? And all it has is a big button that says, get me a taxi, mm-hmm. and a taxi arrives. Like mapping, payment, everything, they're additional features, they're new things. But how do you get something that is the core MVP, and then how do you put it in the hands of people as fast as possible? Mm-hmm. This completely baffles me by, you know, there's a lot of B2B businesses in Ireland, but there's very few B2C. And I would say the majority of that is because how many entrepreneurs that do you know that are willing to stand at the front or the top of Grafton Street and say, here's my idea, do you want to try it? Like, and to just grab everyone and mm-hmm. say, what do you think? And even though you're getting it wrong or things aren't exactly it, anyone that will listen, tell them about the idea.
The ones that are good do that.
Yeah.
So as you say, I'm thinking of, three or four in my head. Who definitely go and hustle.
The other thing, the flip side of that coin is like, let's do an NDA and let's be very selective. And I understand there's IP and there's reasons for NDAs. I'm not poo-pooing NDAs per se, but it's purely about speed. Before Slack, there was 100 companies that did the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. But the only way that Slack won is through pure execution, mm-hmm. speed and execution. Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, I get really thoughtful about the companies that I see now. Like when there's companies like Under Armour that came out of nowhere and then all of a sudden just had complete dominance and you know, in the App Store, physical products, everything. Companies like Charlotte Tilbury. Mm-hmm. Like where was Charlotte Tilbury a year or 2 years ago? And now she's in every single concession, every single shop. Almost overnight. How did that happen? Mm. And it's speed and it's execution that got those people to that point.
And at what stage would a startup typically be funding-wise when you work with them?
The majority will have, you know, let's say 0 to 50K kind of realm, so CSF, that kind of an area. By the time that they leave us, the majority will kind of either move on to gain further investment, so the HBSU, all of that kind of stuff, or private investors and seed investors.
Ooh. And do you stay involved as they grow?
So the real goal is that the baby needs to go to college at some point. And we're bringing the company from zero to about a year and a half in. And what we would quantify as a success is either A, the company has become profitable enough that we can now hire great engineers and great designers in-house. We'll actually ask them to sit in MiniCorp for a good month or two so we can hand over to them and kind of pass the baton and let them fly the coop. Or number two, that they have validated enough of their business that when they go for investment, they don't have to give up a high proportion of equity to the investors. Mm-hmm. The company is worth something and has validated or gained customers during that period.
Okay.
But either of those scenarios, either of those successes would end with us having set up a new technical team, a new design team in-house and kind of, you know, see you later.
Okay. And how many startups you work with are just looking, as you said earlier, to put tech in the deck? I love that new phrase. I'm stealing that. Or, you know, would the majority of them have a co-founder whose background is in tech?
Strangely, not a lot. And so I think I've been the CTO now of about 20 or 40 different companies.
Oh, really? So you go in as CTO on the deck?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. And I'll go to all of the meetings. I'll,
okay, great.
Because it's not that it's an architect that's handing over drawings to us and we're just going and building the thing. Mm-hmm. MiniCorp is now, with the other team members, that is the company. Mm-hmm. And over that year and a half, we need to do everything in our power to make it successful.
Okay, so when you say that, that sounds like so much work in my head. So do you drill that down to number of hours or is it project based?
That's a very good question. And I often wake up and go, why do I do what I do?
Yeah.
And it goes back to the whole passion. I can absolutely guarantee you that.
Yeah.
It's the fact that I got to build a dog food company.
Yeah.
And I got to build a company that's in home care or, you know, company that is changing donations. Like, it's these things matter, and mm-hmm. I get to sharpen my samurai sword of product, where I get to know every single sector and every single industry a little bit better with mm-hmm. every new product that mm-hmm. I get to build. Mm-hmm. And that's deadly. Like, that's literally what drives Brian Kenny.
Mm. So tell us then about, because you're meeting so many different companies, what industries or what sectors are you most excited about?
Ooh. Travel has always been a big one, mm-hmm. but I think for me, my whole goal now with my life is, how do I become an extreme capitalist early on mm-hmm. so that I can become a stronger philanthropist later on?
Okay.
So if I was a person who was, you know, let's say getting a standard wage of, let's say, 30 or 40,000 per year and doing my, you know, 40 or 50 quid to Trocra or whatever it might be, I would rather try to create a huge nest egg, a huge pool of cash that I could then turn around later in my life and deploy it correctly so that I can actually really change something in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Okay, great. And then we will open up to the floor for questions in a couple of minutes. But I just want to draw on one more thing. So one of your podcasts talks about curiosity and always having a learning mentality.
Yeah.
And you kind of drive yourself to do new things constantly. So running was one, learning French, trying to give up booze.
Trying to.
The podcast I listened to, Brian had been off alcohol for, I think, 2 months or longer.
Yeah, yeah.
And I said tonight, like, still off? And I'm like, no. Okay, sorry. What one thing in the past year have you learned that you've stuck with? You also said you were going to run Dublin City Marathon. Did that happen?
So running for me, when I was April of this year, I could not run more than 2 kilometers mm-hmm. without being completely dead.
Mm-hmm.
And now I can easily do 30 kilometers. Like, I'll do about 50 or 60 kilometers a week.
Wow.
And I love that. I love that part of myself where there, but there's also challenges. And myself and Fatima kind of talked about this on the way over. Because of my extreme nature, it's either all or mm-hmm. nothing. Like, I remember I was going for a run and I just had beers a night or two before.
Mm.
But my brain, my mind thinks that I'm the same person all of the time.
Yeah.
And so I ran so hard that I passed out. And
Jesus.
It's mad, like, when you think about it. But still, my body is going, you physically can't do it. After you going out that night before, you can't do it. But my mind is going, absolutely, you did it before, you'll do it again.
Mm.
So there's pros and cons to it. But then the other side of it is that I will bull through every single wall in order to create the things that I want to create.
Mm-hmm.
So extreme in that nature is a plus. Extreme in other natures is probably a negative.
Mm-hmm. So running is your...
Running would be the one,
that's,
I guess,
an amazing accomplishment.
Yeah.
I'm and taking also, inspiration from you, because I tried Couch to 5K and did it, I think. Has anyone tried Couch to 5K?
Yeah.
Yeah. I did it 3 times and then kind of gave up, but I'm going to try it again now after learning from you. Yeah.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
I'm going to do a 100K race next year.
Okay. I won't be signing up for that, but that's deadly for you. Good luck.
And yeah, a couple of marathons and stuff next year as well. So it's like, I really believe that in business, it's the exact same thing as any sport or athlete. You having a healthy, clear mind, having a healthy body, allows you to perform at the top of your game mm-hmm. in business. And it's definitely something that I've only learned this year.
Mm-hmm.
I would have, in 2017, been an advocate or believe that, you know, eat the McDonald's, eat whatever. Yeah. It's just purely about, how do I get sustenance so I can move on and get back into business.
Mm-hmm.
The quality of the work that I create now with having a far healthier lifestyle is, I'd say, 5 or 6x compared to what it was before.
Yeah. Totally with you on that. Okay, who would like to ask the first question?
Yeah. Dun, dun,
dun. D.
Go easy on me.
So you obviously get involved with businesses at a particular window in time, and clearly you can add a huge amount of value at that point in time. But are there businesses, I mean, you must occasionally be tempted to stay involved for the longer term because you get particularly drawn in or you're particularly excited about something. Does that happen, and how do you handle that? And do you ever see yourself at any point in the future either starting your own business or in some way being involved with a business or businesses right through the whole their whole journey?
You are 100% on the money. The goal is that at some point I will leave Minicorp. A Minicorp will be a self-sufficient entity with multiple branches around the world. The way that Minicorp will be really built is the people within the company, the adults, will own that business, but there will be pockets in like Stockholm and New York and so on across globally. Then I will get amazing talent to join the company, because as we get more involved or have equity in some of the companies that we build, as that savant engineer, that amazing designer, looks for the next startup or the next thing to be a part of, they can either go down to Dogpatch Labs and find the next company, or they can come and work in Minicorp and hedge their bets across multiple different companies. So I get the best talent. They get to travel around the world, which is a huge thing at the moment. And so then I get to take a step back, take a couple of ideas and concepts that I have, and put them into Minicorp. And we do this, I like to do this quite frequently. So we launched an idea about a year ago called Popped that was to do with wine. I hated the feeling of when you go into a wine shop and the person comes over and says, what type of wine do you like? And I'm like, I have no idea. I feel really small now. And so we created this really basic app, this really basic idea that you would pay €50 per month. We send you out 3 bottles of wine, but there's also a story. You get connected with Pablo and you kind of say, you know, who is the vineyard? I like this one. That one is kind of middle of the road. That one is crap. And over a period of time, you go on this wine journey of where you've discovered your taste. But that business got to 5K in recurring revenue within, I think it was 3 months. But we shut it down. And the reason being is that I just don't give a shit about wine. I hate wine. And there's no passion in there for me.
Yeah, I like it.
But to answer your question, I know I've completely gone all the way around the houses here, but yes, I will put an idea or multiple ideas in and grow them in the future. And I will probably not stay longer than a year and a half in the ones that are coming in to Minicorp.
Love the plan to make it global as well. And you bring in lots of different like cultures and...
Yeah.
'Cause I love... obviously, you love to travel as well and taking inspiration from the other side of the world, outside of Europe as well.
Definitely. So it's a strange one. So, you know, let's talk about strategy and business. Let's say if you came along with an idea, one of the most healthy things that you can do in Ireland would to grow that business outside of Ireland but into Europe. Mm-hmm. So the minute that a company can get a good understanding of the cultural diversification between Paris and Berlin, or Berlin and Stockholm, and how completely different they are, but you launch your product successfully in each of those different cities. Excuse me, a lot of the M&As, a lot of the mergers and acquisitions will then come out of America and acquire you, because you have already done that groundswell. So traveling within Europe for a product person is a really, really healthy thing to do.
Okay.
You notice these strange nuances, like within Frankfurt, they have these really weird debit cards. Mm. Or, in, you know, I don't know, you just notice these absolutely crazy things. Mm-hmm. And it's just twigged one thing for us. And that's when we talked about employees or people within Minicorp, one of the biggest healthy things that we do is that you cannot be in the office all the time. Mm-hmm. You have to work outside the office. And the reason being is that if you're in an office and you're looking at your screen and you're working away, take that and move it into a coffee shop. All of a sudden, that head goes up and you look at something and you go, why is that like that? Mm-hmm. Or why is that painting that way? You notice different things about the world that you would never have noticed if you were just in the office all the time. And that, to a product person, is a huge plus. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I hope that answered the question.
Yeah.
So I heard Mark Dittle on the radio a couple of weeks ago saying about his new business.
Yeah.
And he said, if somebody can understand what you're doing, you're not far enough ahead. Right?
Sure.
So How important is it for you that you actually understand, I mean, you know, what the concept is yourself? Or if you have somebody like Mark who's so far ahead of the market, can you work with that, firstly? And secondly, what about other technologies, emerging technologies, or something like blockchain? Someone comes to you and said, you know, you mentioned donations, changing donations, and I saw one today where they're tracking donations for the blockchain. Will you work with new technologies, you know?
If I don't understand the idea, I would struggle. Like, I think from the other side of the table, we absolutely need the domain knowledge. I'm not going to have domain knowledge in every single sector. It would just be impossible. But to understand what the vision of the company is a requirement. Like, it's a prerequisite to us getting in bed with anybody. And that can be a long process. So when you think about Apple or any real innovative business, we want to get to this point, but a customer can't just go from here to that point extremely quickly. There's this kind of hop process that happens where you're slowly bringing them on a journey, and then all of a sudden you wake up and you go, I don't remember a world where I didn't have an iPhone. Mm. Or I don't, like, how did I get here? And I think when you look at the likes of Mark Little or people that are looking that far into the future, they know where they want to be, but they also know that they need to kind of bring the market or bring the potential customers along a journey to get to that point. What was the second question? Blockchain.
Blockchain or market.
So, yeah, I think blockchain is going to be huge. So when you think about even relatively low disruption in some markets, you think of container ships, for example. You have a ship that is full of oil or full of multiple different products. They then get what's called a bill of lading, and that bill of lading will sit in a bank somewhere. Imagine that entire process was digitized and said that that ship can leave port and the goods within that ship can be bought and sold multiple times before it's even arrived at its destination. Like, that, if that ship was full of cars, those cars could have had four different owners before they even get to the other side. So you think of blockchain and different emerging tech in general, it can be difficult to wrap your head around, but I still believe that if you cannot tell a five-year-old what your business does, and for that five-year-old to tell another five-year-old, mm-hmm. and then to repeat it back to you, it's very difficult for a customer or potential customer to get it, or for people to connect other people in a network. So if you said, you know, I'm a developer for blockchain in X, if I don't really understand that, then it's very difficult for me to connect you with other people within my network, if that makes sense.
So artificial intelligence is, will you work with artificial intelligence?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay, time for one more question.
Do you believe it has to be regulated?
Regulated? Blockchain or?
No.
AI. Oof. Yes, but I also feel that I don't really have enough knowledge. I would need to learn a lot more about AI to make a really good educated decision on that. But I'm fearful for where it could potentially go. And that fear comes from more sci-fi movies than my own knowledge. So I really don't think that I'm have enough information to be able to make a good decision there.
So before we finish up, ask you one more question. What Irish product company should we be looking out for next year?
Ooh, I love all my kids.
If you just had to pick one. It doesn't necessarily have to be one that you work with.
Bamboo.
Okay. There you go. In the front row. cool. Okay.
Absolutely.
I agree. Okay. Well, I think we'll stop it there, guys. Thank you so much for a great conversation. Really, really enjoyed it. I could honestly sit here all night and continue. We didn't even talk about yoga. And thank you all for coming. We'll be back in January. We've got lots of food and drink here, so please stay and chat with each other. Keeping some of our Startup Grind values in mind, my favorite one and the one that I always talk about is that we focus on making friends, not contacts. So be be human, be sound, be deadly, and just enjoy the chats and happy Christmas. Thank you.